only thing better than watching TV is taking it personally.
You guys, it's Taking It Personally. So excited to have a new guest to talk about a little show that some of us have been mentioning every now and again. So welcome to Taking It Personally, content creator, host of the podcast, Morgan's Pop Talks, Morgan Page. Morgan, how are we?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, a total pleasure. Well, I have to tell you, first off, there was just a goddamn earthquake in New York City. So I am still in shock. It was 4.7 or 4.8. I was in the middle of watching the Vanderpump Rules after show, because I rewatched VPR Valley and the VPR after show. I was in the middle of watching one of those fuckers talking about Tom, and the building started to shake. And I thought, someone is going to blame this on Ariana. It was 20 seconds long. I literally thought to myself, protect the Clawfish, and I have no idea how to handle this, not even a little bit, and then started texting friends and then my mom. And it was a real goddamn earthquake, and we all felt it. Everyone in New York was like, this is why we don't live in LA.
I've seen it all over my social media page. I open it one time and it's all just memes of earthquakes.
And then I Googled, you know, can my building survive an earthquake? And then I found out that, like, earthquake shit, like, only went into effect with new buildings after 95. But anything before that, I don't live in a building that was made after 1995. I'm fucked.
You'll be okay. We're just going to manifest. You're going to be all right. You're all right right now. We're just keeping the good vibes going.
Okay, I'm not great at that. So what advice would you... Have you ever been through an earthquake before?
Never in my life. I have no advice for you.
Oh, my God. So anybody in, like, California or the West Coast, they're probably like, LOL, we deal with this every Tuesday at 9. But right. For New Yorkers, we don't handle new events well. We're so set in our ways, because our ways have helped us survive living in New York City, that Right. When a new challenge is added to the mix, I'm like, no, that wasn't a part of the agreement. That was not part of the deal.
Well, Godspeed.
Thank you. So just saying a prayer. This literally just happened, according to the limited news that I've seen about this, aside from, like, everyone's freaking the fuck out. There was no damage in New York City. It was affected by other states as well. I don't know if it started in Jersey or Connecticut, but hoping that anybody who felt the earthquake is doing okay.
We'll co-sign.
The walls are thin in my apartment, so I heard my neighbors next door being like, what's happening? Because the whole... building shook. The building shook and the outside shook.
That's scary. Yeah, that's scary.
Honestly, it happened once before that I remember. I think about a decade ago, and I was nannying at the time for a prominent family downtown. So they lived in a very expensive all glass building. And one day I just was like, did somebody just move? Did somebody just shake? Like, I was like, was that just me? And then found out that there, in fact, was some sort of small earthquake that happened, and I felt it. But this was worse. This was worse.
That's crazy. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. I feel like this earthquake has a case in the Mondays, but I'm very excited to deep dive a show that I know everyone is talking about, myself included, Vanderpump Rules and The Valley. So I have to ask what your experience has been as a Bravoholic and content creator covering season 11 of VPR versus season 10. Do you feel a difference in how you're watching the show, how you're talking about it? What are you currently focusing on?
Yeah, well, I think now more so than ever before, we're seeing the cast kind of be a little too transparent in the fact that they want this show to last longer than season 11. It's like, I feel like we started to feel that way maybe season 8 or 9, where we all kind of saw the writing was on the wall. Vanderpump is not what it used to be. I mean, I am in the middle of a rewatch and I'm on season 6. And it's like, I mean, just the things that we witnessed in early seasons of Vanderpump Rules that set the bar so high. And I feel like, you know, over the years, they've gotten more famous. They've made more money. They're a little bit more conscious of what they put out on the show. And I feel like we're seeing both sides of that coin this season. We're seeing, you know, people like Lala and Gina and Tom really, I think, produce the show to ensure its longevity, because obviously if no one's filming together, they're not going to be on the show for another 5 years. And then I see the flip side of the coin, which to me is realer and more authentic, of people like Ariana and Katie, who actually don't like these people and don't want to hang out with them. And Ariana is trying to set some boundaries. So I think that just is a major difference for me. Is in the back of my mind, I'm watching the show knowing that they know they have to make a good show in order for this to continue to be their paycheck.
So when it comes to Lala, I mean, Lala has been in the news this week. She recorded a quasi-niche viral episode of her podcast with Heather McDonald, where she was really focusing a lot on trying to explain her upset or reason her upset, which seemed very focused on Ariana, and also opened the door to, like, I'm going to do things at the end of the season that are going to piss people off. So here's me trying to just kind of like set the foundation.
Soften the blow.
Exactly. Soften the blow and start to explain. I listened to it in full. I'm going to be recapping it on an episode of Tip. And I got a ton of feedback from listeners from AGs working on a Satchel Spectacular for Patreon, of just people who are very, very upset at what they feel like is inequitable or unfair judgment of Ariana, which is also added to this kind of normalization of Sandoval. How do you feel in watching the season, the after show? Do you feel like Lala believes what she's saying, and what do you think is behind it?
No, I think that she knows that she has to do something drastic, otherwise the show isn't going to go anywhere. Like, if everybody just iced Sandoval out, it's like, first of all, the show thrives on drama, right? Like, the premise of Vanderpump Rules is these dramatic relationships. And you know, Lala can say however much she wants that she's trying to be softer. To me, everything she's done in the press post-show has proven that she's not really trying to be softer. So were you using that as an excuse to open the door to have the conversation with Tom when, I mean, for 10 years, Lala has not liked Tom. 10 years, you know, and for different reasons, whether it's, you know, Tom yelling at her, Stassi, Katie, whoever. Even before Scandoval happened, you know, I remember Lala at that Watch What Happens Live when she said she was talking about Katie and Schwartz. And then Andy asked her about Sandoval and she goes, we need to get Ariana away from him next. So, like, you can't tell me that you have this catastrophic event and now all of a sudden, in the 10-year history, Lala decides, oh, now is the time that I'm going to give him a chance. Why? There's definitely an ulterior motive behind what she's doing. I'm confused by her right now because she's kind of putting out conflicting statements. We're hearing a lot about the reunion, right? Something's going to happen at the reunion. The fourth wall is broken and we're all like, wait, what? To me, she's making it seem like it's going to have viewers look at Ariana differently. But I've also heard her say that she is going to be staying off of social media. So I'm like, we're already looking at Lala a little differently, I think. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out, is the bomb going to drop on us and make us look at Ariana differently? Or is it going to make us really mad at Lala? And I can't figure that out based on what she's been saying.
And it feels like in her social, on her pod, press, that she's really almost like seeking revenge against Ariana. And I posted something in relation to one of the clips from her pod, or I think it was actually an ET, an entertainment news interview, and said something along the lines of, like, it's sort of reminiscent of a thin-skinned politician who feels insulted by someone else's remarks and can't get over it, especially because it happened on TV. It feels like she's hyper focused on seeking revenge because something happened that embarrassed her.
Yeah.
Versus the conversation about Tom is toxic. We need to get Ariana away from him. I believe that to a certain extent, Lala feels that. But I also wonder, where is the Ariana specific anger coming from? Because
yeah.
She almost at this point skirts the Tom Sandoval is toxic conversation, except to say, I've been saying this for forever and nobody gave me credit. So why is Ariana getting all of the credit? And also, I'm mad at this person. Like she said in that interview, you know, Ariana, this is not a direct quote. This is some sort of, okay, great. There's a, just if you guys can hear that, there's just a little warning about aftershocks and that we should continue. Usual activity is coming from the New York City government. So I will continue recording. And if the Clophis goes down, you guys have better join the Patreon. Some of the Tom of it all is just kind of being swept under the rug while she's saying, Ariana beats all of us. Her ego is unbelievable. She's like, you know, it's even worse than Sandoval. She's like killing all of us with it. She's coming in by far at number one. And I'm like, wait a second. But weren't we saying that the issue here was Tom? When did it shift to being Ariana's fault?
Yeah, I mean, I think because maybe she knows that, you know, Ariana is a big draw to the show right now. And it feels like Ariana's main priority isn't making a good show. It's people respecting her boundaries. And it seems like Lala doesn't want to respect that boundary. Even Tom, I feel like Tom knows that he needs Vanderpump Rules. And Lala said something recently, too, that I was just like, you have got to be joking. She said Ariana should have taken season 11 off. That she should not have come back for season 11. And I was like, are you insane? Like, do you hear what you're saying? The same person who sent Raquel a voice memo on episode one thinks that Ariana should have taken a break from filming. So I just feel like she's clinging on to anything that's going to keep her job security on this show. And she feels like maybe Ariana is threatening that. Or, you know, a lot of people make the comparison about how nobody had the sympathy for Lala with the Randall situation. I feel like even this started last season when we saw nothing about Lala and Randall. I believe she went into season 10 thinking, I'm going to be the main storyline. This stuff with Randall is making national headlines. Like, this is going to be my season. All of it got scrapped because of Scandoval. So I feel like there's probably some resentment there. And I even feel like that's why Lala was the most vocal at the reunion, because we didn't hear from her at all, you know, throughout the entire season. So she's projecting all of these emotions at the reunion to be heard, because she essentially got silenced by the Scandoval of it all. So I think really it boils down to jealousy.
Listen, I think you're making great points. And when it comes to resentment, she does seem to be carrying a little extra baggage or weight around, I knew that Tom was toxic forever and Ariana just refused to recognize it. And that somehow makes her bad, that she's a weaker person or a lesser person for not having taken my word for it. Or additionally, or alternatively, she didn't listen to me when I said something and I deserve the credit for saying something. And yeah. Speaking of Rand, listen, we didn't know the specifics of his level of manipulation, chaos, and abuse until that LA Times expose came out. However, people have been talking about Rand's money issues on the show or off the show, but certainly directly toward Lala for years. Mm-hmm. There have been questions about paying the bills, him not paying vendors, contractors. Even there was even like a Jeff Lewis issue from a, you know, additional Bravo star perspective, not people not wanting to work with him because he did not pay them or did not pay them back. Lala was told that. She mm-hmm. chose to ignore it. I don't remember there being a parade by Ariana or a lot of other people after this all came out of like, we told you this, you're a lesser person ethically or morally for not listening. You would think she would have empathy for Ariana for maybe living in a little bit of a state of denial about just Tom being manipulative, not fucking Rachel, but just Tom being toxic.
Yeah. Yeah, she has very little empathy for her. And she has a lot of empathy for Sheena in the moment, who it's like, for what reason do you have all of this concern for Sheena and her mental health? Which I'm saying it's valid. Like, you want to make sure the people around you are okay. But like you said, she offers no grace to Ariana whatsoever. And she's the one that's been damaged the most. And every one of Lala's confessionals, it feels like she has to mention a brand deal, whether it's the garbage or whether it's, you know, her being on Dancing with the Stars or whatever. But all of those things don't fix a heart that's broken. You could, if my husband cheated on me with one of my friends, all the money in the world wouldn't change the fact that I'm devastated inside. So she almost says it as if it's supposed to be a band-aid over the whole situation. Oh, well, you can't be this angry because you're going on Dancing with the Stars. Like, both things can happen at the same time.
Yeah. And in addition to that, a sense of, I think she's upset that Ariana doesn't seem grateful for the opportunities, that Lala is saying, like, you should be happier about this, about what you're receiving as a result of this, noting that that Lala also got opportunities. Lala also had a role in that Uber Eats. I mean, she had a great one. I watched that video so many times. She was able to purchase her vacation home because of the proceeds from Send It to Daryl apparel.
Right.
And I do have to shout out her hoodie. That is the most comfortable hoodie I have ever worn. So I don't know how you feel about Lala, but how she handled her merch was like, you know, because people put out whatever. I mean, yeah, it's great. I was thinking about wearing it for this recording, but I was thinking about maybe that'll be my reward, is to wear it after when I go for a little bit of a walk. Like,
yeah,
she has been able to create things, but why are Ariana's being used against her? Because she, 3 months after she found out, forgiven Tom?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's like, I don't know, like I said, if she's just trying to manufacture drama for the sake of her job security, but it does feel deeper. I mean, even like, I saw a clip from season like 8 or something. I feel like Lala and Ariana, they've never been best friends. And that's why I was so confused last year. Like, why is Lala the one that is doing the most, you know, the most in your face yelling at the reunion? And like I said, I think it had really nothing to do with Ariana and everything to do with the projection she was, you know, experiencing with her situation with Randall.
It's the quote of Jennifer Aniston talking about Brad Pitt for a Vanity Fair cover that I always mention. It's like, it feels like there's a sensitivity chip that's missing. Mm. And I just don't entirely understand it, especially when you balance that or weigh that against Andy, who's come out kind of strong in saying Lala's the voice of reason, Lala's the voice of reason, especially those last 7 episodes. And I'm thinking, like, is this what reason looks like?
Yeah, it's very confusing. Because, and it's like, I don't know if they maybe misjudged how the audience would interpret things. But I don't see anybody saying that Lala is the voice of reason. So for Andy to say that is also very jarring. I mean, I don't know if the pendulum is going to swing here in the next couple of episodes. But as of right now, I definitely don't see that.
Versus Sheena, who I think has gotten a lot of shit for stuff she has said about upset, about not hearing from Ariana, about bookings and feeling like her dreams have been eclipsed by someone else who, because of, you know, the Scandoval, has been able to receive opportunities that I guess Sheena has always wanted. And then I'm watching the after show, and Sheena is, to me, at least on the most recent after show, she was communicating in a way that to me was actually reasonable, where she's talking about the fact that when it comes to Ariana and Tom, people are focusing on Ariana's upset and punishing her for that. But nobody is asking Tom why he is refusing to carry some of the load. Like, he's making things more difficult for Ariana. Yes. He's not being LOL gracious. He's not acting in a way that shows he's actually filled with regret. And the edit is supporting the idea of the cast rallying around Tom, but not Ariana. in a way that to me is a little infuriating. And I appreciated Sheena for at least acknowledging that, that she sees Sandoval in that way of like, he could be doing things to show remorse. He could be doing things out of care, regardless of his ex's fury, but he's mm-hmm. not doing that. He's choosing not to do that. He's choosing things to make things more complicated. He chose to stay in the house. Now he's upset about her not sending an email fast enough, but he's the one who's making her life more complicated. And then she's getting blamed for how she responds to that.
Yeah. And not to mention, you know, when you're with somebody for 10 years and you know, even Ariana said it, I think in the preview for next week's episode, like he knows the deepest, darkest parts of me. He probably knows what triggers her. He knows all of these things. So it's almost like, A, are you doing it on purpose to get this reaction out of her, to make people see? I feel like Tom wants people to see, oh, this is what I've been dealing with for the past 10 years. And if only the audience can see this. But I think, you know, contrary to what they thought was going to happen, like people are like, yeah, female rage. Like it's a real thing. She's allowed to be mad. She's allowed to be upset. Where if he just would show up in a different manner, I feel like the whole season would have gone differently.
Yeah, it's the difference between saying I'm sorry and behaving in a way that shows your regret. He's not taking even a little bit of responsibility. And exactly what you said about he's trying to trigger her and then weaponize her upset and use that as an excuse for fucking Rachel for yeah. 7+ months. And I'm yeah. sure it was longer than 7. He does that quite literally in the newest episode or on the after show. I forget which it was, but it was on the main episode. He says to Schwartz when Ariana's losing her shit about the dog, about Maya or something else, he says to Schwartz, her upset, the way she yelled at me, that's how she always was.
Yeah.
That's why I needed to leave, because she was always that mad. Yep. Meanwhile, look at the reactions of her friends. Lord knows that a relationship behind closed doors can be different than how it appears with you know, friends and social surroundings. But people know Ariana. This is not the behavior of someone. It does not feel like consistent behavior. It feels right. like she is reacting from a very specific place, from being betrayed and the upset from that. I am yeah. not getting with every, and I would say it if I was, with every iota of my being, I do not feel like her rage is a consistent rage that had been going on for years versus Tom's behavior, where there is a pattern of selfishness.
Yeah.
But everybody's focusing on Ariana's essentially episode-specific upset, like the episode of being cheated on, not the episode of reality TV. Like, because of the situation she is in, Lala seems to be participating in this. Lord knows Sandoval is, and Schwartz is like, leave me alone, to define her by her response to this and then use that as a way to say she also doesn't care enough. It feels especially manipulative.
Yeah. Well, he's been trying to do that even as early as the Howie Mandel interview. You know, he was saying things like, you know, you don't see what she does behind closed doors. No, like everybody has only seen this affair. They don't see all the things that led me to this place. And so now that people weren't buying that, you know, because it's like we all saw that interview and we're like, what is he like victim blaming here almost? And he's like, oh, that didn't go over how I thought it would. Obviously, like his communication style was not great in that episode anyways, but he's like, so now I have to do it in a different way. Now I literally have to show it, cameras up, prove it to the world that this is the Ariana that I have to deal with, because they didn't believe it when I said it on the Howie Mandel podcast. But like you said, it's a reaction to something that he did. Ariana, I mean, I don't know, I didn't live in the house, but I would say it's safe to assume that she wasn't like that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah. And yet there has been a significant reaction of people, at least on social, who feel like Ariana is the one who is being difficult. I mean, Ariana is definitely being difficult right now. I'm 100% acknowledging that. I just feel empathy for the level of difficulty that she is in and the level of upset that she feels. Like I look at Ariana and I see a woman whose rage is valid. And the fact that we even have to think about rage of whether or not it's valid, it's so heavily tilted and weighed against women versus men. I don't necessarily see those same people calling out Tom. It feels like there is an upset about Ariana for... it's not even like not allowing the viewers to move on, but for being so mad. People, there is a chunk of the audience, I think especially women, that feels like Ariana is the one who has done bad.
It's so easy for people to judge, though. Like, just get off the high horse for a second, because if you were in her position, you cannot tell me that any of the people that are like, oh, Ariana is being too much, put yourself in her shoes for 5 seconds. And you want to tell me that you would be this little angel and walk around your ex and have no problem and everything's, oh, it's fine, whatever. Like, that is not reality. It would be weirder, I think, if 3 months later she was able to hang out with him and be friends and be totally fine with the level of betrayal that went on. I think if in a year from now she's still reacting at such a heightened emotional state, then we might need to look and say, okay, it's been a year. We really need to start doing some internal healing. But 3 months, I'm like, I would still be losing my mind if I were in her shoes.
It feels like the editors know that when Ariana's freaking out, I mean, that's some good television. Like, especially because it's happening, because it's really only happening in a group event because she's obviously triggered by Tom. But some of Tom's freakouts are not being included in the episode. There was a deleted scene that was released where he's saying she was essentially dirty and sloppy. Yeah. He's using really crude language out to like dinner. I think it was with Jax when he was with Jackson Schwartz. It's not a good look for Tom. For whatever reason, the network decided to release it as a deleted scene, I guess, to get all of us hopped up. But they didn't include it in the narrative for the episode. And I also thought it was really fucking weird that we get to hear that Tom maybe yelled at Anne, but maybe not, maybe fired her or maybe gave her 2 days off when it happened seemingly obviously at the same time or directly right after Anne filmed with Ariana and Tom was eavesdropping about Anne wanting to work with Ariana instead of Tom. Like,
right.
You cannot tell me that cameras were down when that happened. You can't tell it to me, because the way that Ariana is describing the timing of it, her getting ready, I think it happened while the crew was still there, or at least the way that it's sort of being passed off without a lot of focus, no big questions being asked to Tom in confessionals. Did you yell at Anne? It's just this kind of like, let's brush it off. It's just Tom being Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck is that? What's that?
Yeah. It's really interesting. I have a theory in Bravo in general where they don't let the same person be the villain for more than 2 seasons in a row. Unless they're like a Lisa Rinna who actively likes to do that kind of stuff. But I think a lot about Erika Jayne and how hard fans were going at Erika Jayne, in my opinion, rightfully so. But then we started to get this shift, right? Where she's still not the greatest ever, but people were softening to her a little bit. And I saw the same thing now happening with Tom Sandoval, where it's like, okay, how much can one person take and how long can they be the villain and everyone tweeting them and in their comment section and whatever? I think there is a layer of the mental health aspect that they take into consideration, because especially Tom Sandoval, for however, you know, much he's talked about his mental health struggle in the past year, I wonder if that is in the back of their mind, you know, when they choose which things to put out and which things not to put out. Like, can Tom Sandoval physically, emotionally take being as big of a villain for another season as he did the previous season? Now, also, you have to ask yourself, well, if that's the case, then he shouldn't go back. But that's easier said than done. You know, this is how he puts food on the table. This is how he pays his bills. So I kind of, like I said, I started to notice it more with Erica, where it's like, okay, the fandom has gone really hard on her for 2 seasons in a row. She's obviously dealing with a lot. Like, how much longer can she be the punching bag? Can we take a little bit off of her plate while still, you know, giving the people not necessarily what they want, but not being naive about shying away from stuff, you know, regarding Tom Girardi? So maybe they were trying to look out for him in that aspect of it, because the deleted scenes, sure, they'll be viral, but a lot more people sit down and watch the actual episode than see a deleted scene.
Totally. And I think the deleted scene protects them with the, like, see, we're showing Tom isn't always great, but they're hiding it from the majority of the audience and they're not including it in the general storyline.
Right.
And I do think there's a difference between morality and sustainability. I do not think almost, I don't think the network thinks about, quote unquote, protecting their cast almost ever. I really don't think, from everything that I have heard from the years of doing this podcast, when I sometimes come to the table with that, I'm typically that thinking is typically squashed by people who know a lot of the time more than I do.
I want to hear access. More. Like, tell me what they said.
I sometimes give them the benefit of the doubt. I sometimes look at the network as a being. Like, in the ways that we are a community and oftentimes hold ourselves and sometimes each other accountable, I sometimes associate that same sort of standard to the network, which genuinely does not almost ever deserve it. Like, genuinely doesn't deserve it, versus looking at the ways that they look at Tom, and they're not trying to protect his mental health. They're trying to sustain him so that he can continue on the show. I don't think it's about, like, making sure Tom is stable. I do not think it's that in any way, if there's a question of stability, because they're not doing that with other members of the cast.
Yeah.
And speaking of the cast, when it comes to the ethics of all of this and people's behaviors, you know, response versus silence, it is interesting to me that in that beach scene, everybody shut the fuck up. And in the scene with, like, the pizza and Maya, like, nobody spoke. And I don't know how much of that is, like, people didn't want to get involved because they didn't want to get their, you know, heads chewed off, versus this is a moment, we know it, we're going to silence ourselves so that the two main actors here, and I don't mean that as far as, like,
making
it, but just, like, the two big faces of this can yell at each other and or talk, versus I don't feel like I need to stand up for Ariana in this space. Like, at the end of the beach scene, when she's talking about misogyny and she's saying, like, you guys are awfully fucking quiet. And speaking of guys, Tom is a misogynist. He needs to hear from fellow men that he's fucking up because he doesn't care when a woman says it. It's interesting to me that nobody seemed to respond to that or listen to it or acknowledge it. There was, like, nothing from anyone, which is not an editing issue to me. That's, like, the cast feeling like they don't need to or want to get in the middle of all of this.
Yeah. Oh, this season is so much, isn't it? It's so much. And I whenever they had their first scene together, in the bar where, you know, Ariana shows up and Tom's there. And I was like, it's the first time that the viewer saw the two of them together. I remember doing, like, a recap after it. And I was like, this just confirms my fear. Like, they have to do scenes together. But how it went from zero, literally zero, wouldn't even make eye contact with each other, to 100, like, on a flip of a dime. I'm like, okay. Maybe we don't need as many scenes with them together as I thought that we did, because if you continue to have a beach scene or the dog murderer scream fight, right? Like, I feel like as an audience, sure, it makes for good TV, but how much of that can you actually watch? I don't want to, you know, leave every single episode of Vanderpump Rules feeling, like, dirty and gross inside, where I feel like that's a difference right now between Vanderpump Rules and Summer House, where Summer House has, you know, just as much drama with a lot of different couples, but there are still moments that you're laughing at Sierra and West, and you're enjoying even Jesse being way too flirty. But right now, Vanderpump Rules doesn't have any of that.
Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravoholic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andysgirls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andysgirls. Sign up today. I just came back from the salon, and for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Way's other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to T-H-E OUAI.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's THEOUAI.com with promo code Andy.
And do you think they can go back to a place where that exists? Maybe that's what they're pushing for. There's like the idea that Ariana isn't going to be here for much longer. We know she's a seemingly a bright, shining star. It's not that we're necessarily pushing her out, but we're not going to make this more comfortable for her to stay, that they genuinely have more invested in Tom. But will that investment pay off? Can Vanderpump Rules come back to a place where there are more moments of light? If that is a cast that includes Tom, but not Ariana, maybe not Ariana and Katie, and will viewers want that?
Right. It's a double-edged sword because, you know, people will say all day long, like, whether it's, Ariana needs to go, she's clearly not happy, you know, but then what's going to happen when she's gone? People will be like, oh, well, the show's boring. Well, this is what you wanted. So, you know, you have to pick and choose your battles. I feel like the only little glimmer of, like, even just cheeky humor is between Schwartz and Katie, of all people. Like, especially that last episode, I feel like they're kind of flirting with each other, even though they had this also very dramatic moment, but it's like awkward, but kind of giggly. And I feel like that right now is the only saving grace of a little bit of, I don't even know if I want to say joy, but just not like screaming deathmatch drama.
Yeah, that and James.
James, yes.
Who has in a way of alleviating things at moments that don't feel passive aggressive versus Brock, who is so desperate to be paid on this show. And I like don't begrudge him for that. Obviously, he has a lot of bills and he needs to pay for the kids who we almost never discuss, at least, you know, at this point this season.
Yeah.
But it feels like he's trying to like put in these little moments or insert himself in order to create stuff versus James, who to me is just like reacting in a way that feels normal.
Yeah. Don't even get me started on Brock.
I don't think he's like a it's not up to me to be like bad guy, but I'm just kind of annoyed at him, maybe for having an opinion. That's probably really unfair of me, but I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Like, you're acting like you've been a part of this cast for a decade. I know you're married to Sheena, but that's just honestly, for me, not enough.
Yeah. Well, honestly, for me, it's not even so much that as much as it is, he's being super transparent about like making a name for himself. Like bringing up Rachel in front of Ariana at the beach. Who the hell are you, Brock Davies, to say anything about her in front of Ariana? And it's like, that's what triggered, I think, the big blow up, really, is because in the back of Ariana's mind, she's like, oh, this is what I have to deal with. It's like one thing to be with Tom. And he's, like she said, throwing all these passive aggressive jabs at her. But then to have big Brock, you know, puff his chest up and talk about Rachel in front of her is just like a level of disrespect that's low, even for a reality TV show.
Yeah, he's trying to make this thing into a joke while trying to involve the person most harmed by it. Mm-hmm. And then he tries to reposition it as like, oh, I was just trying to get them to talk. No, you weren't. You were trying to create a moment. Like, you're not good enough in order to try to even lie to us about that.
Right.
It was very, very transparent and it was not well executed.
And like, you were trying to get them to talk and you thought that was going to do it. Like, the logic makes no sense.
Yeah, there's also some additional lapses in logic on the after show when Sandoval's talking about how gross it is that Katie and Max are hooking up and that he would never have done anything like that. It's too close to people's friendships. He wouldn't have stepped over that line. Like, his ability to entirely disassociate from fucking Ariana's good friend in her bed while she was at her grandmother's funeral and dressing up as his mistress for Halloween. And he's saying that he wouldn't, after a breakup happened, hooking up with his ex's pal. I mean, it's nuts.
It's delusional.
It's delusional. And he's presenting to us that Ariana's behavior is delusional. And it's like, I keep going back to that because it's just so infuriating to see the cast respond with elements of support. And maybe some of that's coming from exhaustion of like, Lala's argument is, I know who Tom is, so I sort of don't need to get involved in all of that. But mm-hmm. now I feel like I want to tell you who, what Ariana is about. And it just, that argument just really doesn't land for me. It doesn't land that with this whole Maya thing and the opening, going into her room without her consent, if she doesn't want to talk to you and has to go through your assistant or a lawyer, you should know better than to open the door to her, the one space that she has that is private in this overwhelmingly toxic environment both of you are participating in by staying there. But to open the door because you have like an air conditioning issue and then leave the dog in there for several hours and then have Lala say on the episode, tripling down on the after show, that that's Ariana's fault, that Ariana is sloppy and gross. And then Tom say, well, maybe it was Anne. I mean, you still went into her room. Like,
yeah.
You can't really blame that on your assistant. And you're acting in a way that's just so, it's not good. The fact yeah. that this is now shifting onto Ariana of how dare she be so upset. The dog is alive. The dog apparently only seems alive because she recognized that the dog had been stuck alone and had eaten something and paid $6,000 to the vet. I don't think the dog yeah. would have been like, no worries, guys. Like, I got this. I can process these like wooden chopsticks on my own. So it's not that everything was okay. Like, you really, truly fucked up, but it's everyone else's fault but Tom, and the cast is supporting that.
Yeah, I think it is a chain of events. Like, I don't think that it is fair to say that it is 100% Tom's fault, but I also don't think it's fair to say that it is Ariana's fault. It's a chain of events that happen. Had the food not been in there, but Maya been locked in there, it would have been fine. Had Maya not been locked in there, it would have been fine. So it's like there's so many elements at play to where you really can't just blame one person for the situation. I think if anything, they should have split the bill. Like, if I was, and this is just another thing where if I was Tom and I knew that my action played a role in this pretty traumatic experience that had a huge bill, I would be like, let me pay half of it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. It was an accident. But he just doesn't operate like that.
Yeah. It's funny that he keeps talking about the fact that Ariana hasn't paid utilities. And then he's talking about the fact that, well, you know, Maya's definitely half mine because I played with her and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, where's the actual responsibility here? Like, what's even right. happening? And I don't think that this is going to be a custody fight over the dog. The dog is not Tom's. Like, it's
right.
Tom is not. Tom owns things without being responsible for them.
Yes.
So when responsibility becomes important, I don't think the person you're going to look to is Tom.
Right.
So what's even happening at this point? The fact that I feel like this has to be litigated so often and that the cast seems intent on like evening out responsibility here, it just makes me feel slightly nuts.
Yeah, I think we all are feeling a little nuts.
The one thing that honestly makes me feel better is that when it comes to like any kind of potential communal feeling that an audience has, the fact that, and I feel this too, so many people are on social right now whispering like, you know what? I like the Valley. Like the fact that the Valley yeah. seems to be like taking over some aspect of our thinking, or at least like our enjoyment, or a certain level of mess that doesn't feel, it doesn't make me feel as gross as Vanderpump Rules does.
Yeah.
Is that feels like a miracle. That, yeah. that genuinely, I thought the Valley was going to be a shit show. And right. now I'm like, oh, do I like watching this?
Right. It's caught us all by surprise.
I have to say, when Jesse put his hand up to tell his wife to shut the fuck up, I have not laughed out loud so hard because I was like, oh, this man is
nuts.
No worst. Like, he's that kind of guy. And I dated someone who at one point said to me very sincerely, like, I don't know how to feel empathy. And I should have run away. But I was like, oh, I can teach you. Like, Jesse's in that therapy session and he's like, it's like he's at a zoo and he's like hearing like a bird. What kind of bird is that? When he's listening to his wife try to explain that what she and his therapist or counselor or whatever try to be like, yeah, what she needs is to feel care and love. And that's new information for him.
Right, right. I mean, it's pretty sad when you can one up Jax Taylor on being a bad partner, but he has managed to do it in 3 episodes.
Yeah, and I think Jax is a much better salesman than Jesse is. Like, Jax at least is able to spin it in a certain way where it's like, oh, yeah, we know this is all manipulated, but, like, he's at least at some point, I don't know, I wouldn't want to be married to either of them, but, but, like, to a certain extent, it's like, I don't even know how to describe, it feels different. What do you think that difference is?
Honestly, I think it's probably because the majority of the cast have nothing to lose. You know, it's season one. They really have to. That coupled with the fact that Jax, Brittany, and Kristen know how to make good TV. So the fact that you have all these new people and even like Jax and Kristen kind of having, you know, a golden ticket opportunity because, you know, they were fired from Bravo to come back. Not everybody gets that opportunity. Actually, a lot of people don't get that opportunity. So how are they going to take advantage of it? And it's like, in the meantime, you've had however many years to see what people are liking with Vanderpump Rules, what people aren't liking with Vanderpump Rules, and kind of mold the show off of, you know, the public perception. Even I remember, I also feel like some of this is Jax's ego, because, you know, he always is like, I've been working on this. Like, he makes it sound like it was his show sometimes. And I remember, you know, one of his last episodes, it might have been his last episode, he's having that confrontation with Lisa and he calls it my show. And she stops him and she says, no, this is my show. Don't you forget it. And I feel like now that he has this second chance, he's like, oh, I'm going to show you what my show looks like. And I'm going to show you that it is my show and that I can, you know, create another big Bravo reality show. So I think you have those key players and then you have newbies who want to be a reality TV star. And so they're just throwing it all to the wall and it's working.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest in saying the only person or couple, and I don't even remember the husband's name, that I think of as like not being like star fuckery, like not being manipulative, not being like a certain level of toxic, are Nia and her husband, whose name I will never remember. It's just like a guy not named Jesse.
Right.
I just like, I watch their interactions. I'm like, oh, they're in love. They're supporting each other. They're dealing with 2 newborn twins. Like, they're doing a lot, but they seem to have like genuine affection for each other and an awareness of what the fuck is going on. Like, they seem like normal people, and everybody else to me, genuinely everybody, has an element of like, I want this so bad.
Yeah.
Which, how could you not? You're signing up for reality TV. You want to be a reality TV star. You want to be able to monetize it. You want the fame and everything else. It's just so interesting how that is informing a lot of this, especially because the fourth wall has become completely broken.
Yeah, well, even like you think about characters like Jasmine. Jasmine has been in the wheelhouse for a long time and people don't realize she was on The Bachelor however many years ago that she was a contestant on The Bachelor a long time ago. And she was rumored a couple different times to be like on the outskirts of Vanderpump Rules, like coming in as a friend on Vanderpump Rules. And so now, you know, she finally gets her moment on The Valley, but you have to wonder how many other people are in the Vanderpump Rules sphere, you know, because even I was watching not this week's episode, but last week's episode, when they're all sitting at Sir and Marciano from Vanderpump Villa is sitting at the table. And it's like, so how many people do you think are going to Sur, hanging out with these people, maybe not only in the hopes to be on a reality show, but certainly it's in the back of their mind.
Zach, maybe it's just because I've seen him on Britney's social, but he looks super familiar.
Yeah.
And behaves exactly as I would sort of assume he would. Like, it's just like watching that big dinner scene. I mean, what do you actually think happened with the conversation, the rumors, Kristen's reveal? How are you feeling about all of this when it comes to what people may or may not have been saying about Michelle?
I feel like Janet's explanation seemed the most logical, right? Where I can't remember specifically, but I believe it was in a confessional where she said, you know, we were sitting, we had this conversation, it was one comment, and then, you know, I kind of pushed back on it and we moved on. But Kristen historically exaggerates a lot of things and maybe adds certain details that weren't necessarily said. But I also think that Kristen is one of those people who believe her version of reality, even if it's wrong. You know, like she can't, she's like, no, but it was a thought in my mind. That means somebody had to have said it. I didn't just make it up in my own head. She really believes what she is saying. So I feel like I don't even know if you want to say lost in translation, but I just feel like Kristen exaggerates and she believes her exaggerations.
So from my understanding, and I think I might be screwing this up, and I honestly rewatched The Valley and I was still confused.
Still, I was too.
Right? Like, I'm not quite sure how I feel about all of it, but from my probably muddled interpretation, Janet had some sort of conversation with Michelle where Michelle mentioned that she supported the Don't Say Gay bill and that Michelle believed that it, quote unquote, protected children.
Right. That's what Janet said.
Right. She talked about it with Jasmine and Zach and said something along the lines of, like, be aware of this, that it might come up and might be a teachable moment.
Right.
Which I interpreted as, this could be a thing to discuss when we're shooting. So be aware of it because it could be conflict and it's political and everything else.
Right.
And then Zach told Kristen some aspect of it, of like, because she supports this bill, and I'm not like minimizing the effect of that, but like her supporting that bill says to me that she's probably politically conservative, and politically conservative means she's probably a Republican. So what does that mean if like a Republican has joined the cast? And then it's the weirdest game of telephone. And then from that, Kristen interpreted that as people in the cast are saying that Michelle's a Republican, which makes her racist, which then Kristen sort of backed away from in saying, when I said racist, I meant racist and or homophobic. And that's where we are. And then it got back to Michelle of people saying she was or is a Republican and is also racist versus maybe the original conversation, which is like this person has a political opinion that I think the majority of the cast, probably not all of the cast, to be honest, but like a group of people in the cast vehemently disagree with and they think it could be content.
Right.
And then that got sort of channeled and repackaged and repackaged.
It was a big snowball effect. I mean, that snowball started at the top of the hill and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it hit the bottom. But it is interesting that Kristen, of all people, is the one that's like really running with this. And she even said something in a confessional like, this happened off camera. She didn't say this verbatim, but the consensus was, this happened off camera. And I'm shocked that people thought we wouldn't bring it up on camera. So it's like, was she holding that in her back pocket to bring to the show because she's a reality TV vet? But at the same time, you're like, Kristen, hello, like, you of all people probably don't want to be the one opening up this can of worms, especially if there were other people involved. Like, people do each other's dirty work all the time on shows like this. So you, Kristen, should be very careful about what you say and how you say it.
And Kristen essentially fell for it.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, the way she was delivering it wasn't there's some confusion or concern around Michelle's values. The conversation was, you guys were saying shit about Michelle and I'm going to call you out on it, which then got interpreted or received as Kristen saying bad things about members of the cast and then is maybe lying or repackaging how she came to receive them.
Right. I kind of wish, I don't know if I like watched this wrong, but did they only show flashbacks of the fight or did I miss something?
So I thought when it was the to be continued of them yelling at each other at Michelle's party, I assumed that when we're told by editors to be continued, that there's in fact, you know, spoiler alert, a continuation.
Yeah, I was very confused.
So then when the next episode started and it was like the next day, people are talking, I'm like, oh, okay, so they're starting this in a weird way that I'm not into, but then they'll go back to the full, you know, it's how sometimes they start with like 6 months earlier and then 6 months later and then you go straight. No, they kind of gave up or hid what actually ended up happening with the rest of the fight. It was very confusing to me.
It was very confusing. And it was like chaotic to watch as an audience member, which I feel like this might be like one of the criticisms I have, if I have one at this moment, is that, you know, we do have a lot of confusion as to what they're talking about. I mean, even us discussing what happened at the dinner, we're like, I think this happened and I think this happened. But it's like when you do the flashback, I thought we were going to get more context around the fight, because even at the last episode or the previous episode, we only got what felt like the first 3 minutes of the fight. And it's like we missed the whole Zach in the kitchen. That was only shown, I think, as a flashback. So I feel like we missed so much context of what this fight actually was, of the details, of the intricacies of it. And it was just confusing.
Do you think it's because potentially the fight became too much about filming the show?
Maybe.
That like they were saying they were conspiring, but honestly, like, give it to us.
Yeah,
it's already happening. That's the what Kristen was directly saying at the dinner is like,
right,
this, and in confessionals, is this is only happening because they're trying to like skirt the law of how to film reality TV. And in Kristen's mind, she's like, I'm going to call it out. But babe, like, we want to see the whole call out. Like,
right,
why aren't we watching that happen? And also, to confuse, listen, both of these are bad, to be racist, to be homophobic, but to confuse racism with questions about whether or not someone is homophobic or insensitive or maybe uneducated on the very, very harmful effects of the Don't Say Gay bill. How do you confuse that? Like, how do you even, especially when you're saying in your confessional and talking about the fact that you were literally canceled
for
racist behavior, how would you confuse that with all of this? Or is it just people pulling out how they feel about a person's beliefs that like one A equals, you know, like 2 + 2 = 4? Is that what we're watching take place? Because it's not going terribly well.
Yeah, I have no idea. Truly, I have no idea. And I feel like anytime you think that there's a logical answer with Kristen, that's not the answer, because she's just not like a logical 1 + 1 = 2 type of person. I mean, even like the situation with Alex, you know, you have Janet saying like Kristen making Alex into be this big villain is not the relationship that I knew. Even when they broke up, you know, Kristen wasn't saying that Alex was this big villain. So I just feel like, honestly, you can never take anything that Kristen says at face value. I mean,
which I wonder what that experience has been like to be Kristen and Luke Is that his name?
Yes.
He's too normal for this.
God bless him.
He should go back to Colorado or whatever and live his life. I don't understand why he's here.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I think there are valid questions, even though it's an entirely Christian's choice, of wanting to have a child with someone who does not live in the same state as she does. I nothing makes me sadder than seeing her feel joy about living in that apartment after the house stuff and the fact that she spends an extra $79 a month. Where's the money from the house sale? Like, there's so much about this that I'm like, oh God. Like, I want to see Kristen. She's been a reality TV star for how long?
Right.
This is where she's lived. Like, it feels like we haven't moved on from like mid-era Vanderpump Rules. Like,
no.
How has she gone back this far in her life?
Yeah. And it's giving, you know, Carter, you know, everything that Janet was saying was very reflective of what Stassi and Katie said, you know, where the relationship is so up and down. One second they're in love, the next second, you know, he's, you know, the devil himself walking around the earth. And so it really is. I mean, we talk about people like Jack's not growing, but like Kristen, she really is the same person.
And I do like her.
Yeah, I don't dislike her.
I like Kristen. I feel like when I think of Kristen, I'm like, she has grown. But then the reason I think that is because she's no longer dating Tom. Or like that era of Tom. And it's like, no, that's not really, there's a difference between growth and age.
Yeah.
And I do think that there are aspects, I genuinely think that Kristen has grown. Like, I really do think, but it's like, has she grown enough?
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't know for Kristen how genuinely triggering it might be to go back to a Vanderpump Rules-esque universe at this point in her life, like literally and figuratively at this moment in her life. I don't know how that might lead someone to revert back to behaviors that we have seen for many, many years. But also, it appears that her behaviors when the cameras weren't there are somewhat similar to what we're watching now. And it just, I want her to be okay.
Yeah.
But I'm like, damn, Kristen, like your choices with these guys. Again, we haven't really seen anything from Luke, but like it hasn't been great. It just hasn't been great.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, for however not great it's been at the root of it, like she just wants to be loved. Right. And, you know, she's definitely getting to the age where you have to start thinking about your biological clock. And it's like there's so much pressure on women in general in every aspect of life, but especially at that moment in her life, there's probably so much pressure on her because it's like, if it's not now, then when will it be? So I feel like sometimes she just puts that pressure even more so on herself. And she's like, I'm going to make this happen any way possible, even if it's not necessarily, you know, the most healthy way to go about doing things. But it is, I mean, it is sad when you think about it like that, that I think really deep down, Kristen just wants to be loved.
Yeah, I just don't know that she has the capacity to understand toxic love.
Yeah.
That she thinks of love as like, okay, I love this person, so I'm going to normalize all of this, or I'm just going to remain in this. And you know, like you could even argue, although so much of it has to do with like money and everything else, that like what form of self-love exists on this specific show, like on Kristen's journey on this show? Does she want to be doing this? Is this a way for her to grow emotionally, or is this genuinely just a toxic but well-paying job? This is the life she made for herself, and she might not feel like she has a lot of other choices in that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to look at the difference between Stassi and Kristen, you know, because they went through the same exact thing at the same exact time, and they've gone down two very different paths. I mean, Stassi was with Bo whenever this all happened, so I feel like she did have a leg up, you know, in that realm where she was already with the guy that she eventually would go on to marry. But, you know, Stassi has been able to build a life for herself outside of reality TV. And, you know, every interview clip that I've heard from her, you know, she's at a place where she's like, I don't want to be back in those toxic situations. Like, I'm happy with my life. I have two kids now. I'm doing other things to make money. But, you know, that wasn't Kristen's path. And like you said, if she's not going to do this show, then what is she going to do? I mean, I know that she did have her podcast, but we don't know how successful it was. We don't know how much money it was bringing in or not bringing in. You know, she's going through another breakup, moving from a house back into an apartment. So it very well could be, you know, yes, a business decision, or more so a business decision than an actual want, you know, like in her soul.
I listened to, I know that Kristen just rebranded her current pod. I listened to sort of everybody's pods during the height of the scandal. I was listening to Stassi's reaction, listened to Kristen's, Sheena's, Lala's. And the thing with Kristen is it's like, I want to hear more of her long form because I think she can be reasonable. I just don't know when it comes to her level of agitation, the way it's described by members of this cast and maybe others is like, she's like this on off camera too. And that just makes me feel a little sad for her. Like I wish that it was, I don't know. I feel like with Jax makes like an active choice to be an asshole and he might find delight in that or whatever else. With Kristen, I'm like, it feels like she just can't help herself but live in a world of chaos, but also that is a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about, you know, how she grew up, but a lot of times if you grow up in a chaotic environment, you don't know how else to operate. Like you only know how to operate your life in dysfunction. So, you know, I don't want to speak on behalf of her childhood or even her, you know, early adult years, but it's possible.
It's not necessarily that there's a comfort in it, but it feels like there's a connection. Of like, I recognize that this is an environment that exists. And subconsciously, there's that choice of like trying to normalize that. Of like, you're not making an active choice of like, you know, this guy might treat me like shit. I want to participate in this. It's just the trying to like normalize and excuse it, which is sometimes replicating behaviors of, you know, models that you've seen of dysfunctional relationships. And with Kristen, I'm just like, how does that work when it comes to reality TV of subconsciously sort of replicating the dysfunction of making the same mistakes over and over again? Because I do think she has grown, but also we're hearing that the model of it might be sort of similar behind the scenes. I wish that it was more of a performance. I wish that Kristen was maybe at a more solidified, secured place in her life than what I'm seeing. But I also might be wrong. Like maybe she is doing better. Maybe this is just, we're just a couple episodes in. Maybe I'm giving too much credit to people who are maybe upset that she's bringing this stuff up on camera and have a vested interest in sort of like denying the truth behind what she's saying, that there was a conversation, that it was discussed of like, ooh, maybe this is something we can discuss, you know, while we're filming.
Yeah.
And that people thought that they had safety and protection in saying that when the cameras aren't up. Like, I do think that there's some truth to that.
Yeah. Well, they're going to learn real quick.
Yeah. This is a teachable moment for a lot of people, not just Kristen. So listen, I could talk to you all day. This was a delight. You need to come back on Andy's Girls. So what is your Bravo love language? Do you feel like you yourself as a viewer and also really successful content creator, do you feel like you steer like your astrological sign? Is it Housewives? Is it Summer House? Is it Vanderpump Rules? Is it Below Deck? Is it like the Housewives classic stuff? Is it the non-Housewives classic, Bravo classic stuff? Where do you kind of find yourself?
My gateway drug into Bravo was Vanderpump Rules. That's the show that I started with. So I feel like I always skew towards those shows, the Southern Charms, the Summer House, the Vanderpump Rules. But obviously, you know, the way that Vanderpump Rules was brought to us was through Beverly Hills. So then I went back and watched all of the Beverly Hills. So I would say I am like a classic Housewives mixed with I mean, they're not really young kids anymore, but when they started with the young kids of it, because I was also the same age as them, you know, I was in college watching them, you know, in the back alley of Sur. So I related to them. I feel like we've grown up at the same time. I think I'm younger than them, but I think I've probably grown up a little bit more than most of the cast of Vanderpump Rules. But yeah, that's my love language for sure. I don't miss Vanderpump. I don't miss Southern Charm, and I do not miss Summer House.
Do you relate to anyone now at the point that you're in your life? Or do you find yourself relating to the memory that you had? Like, I relate to who I was watching these folks when I was in college versus I am X years old, I'm in X relationship.
Well, I mean, thankfully, when I first started watching Vanderpump Rules, and even now, I don't like conflict. So I would say I didn't relate to really any of them because I didn't like, you know, I don't like being in mess that I'm involved in. I will say, you know, I always loved Ariana. She just was the cool girl. And, you know, I was like kind of the edgier girl or whatever back in college. But I would say now I relate to Madison LaCroix because I'm newly married. I don't have a kid yet, but, you know, I'm in that stage of my life where I'm getting a house and my husband and I are planning my future. But I recently also went through my Paige DeSorbo phase in the fact that I really wanted to be successfully independent, you know, make an identity for myself in business and all of those things. I will say my difference from myself and Paige now, and I think this is a journey that Paige has to go on herself, but, you know, I also did long distance for 5 years, so I can relate to her in that aspect. But I've learned, you know, being married now that when you get married, your identity doesn't go away and your business identity doesn't go away. And if you marry the right person, they will only enhance your individuality and your goals, and they'll support you and they'll do what you can or what they can to get you to the next level. So sometimes I feel like Paige, which we can get down a whole other Summer House rabbit hole, but I feel like Paige thinks she's going to lose all of that if she, you know, gets engaged, but from my experience, it only enhances it if you're with the right person.
Okay, you need to come back. We need to do a tip about Summer House.
Okay.
We need to do... Okay, great. It's going to be stat. I'm going to tell you what, because Summer House is giving me so fucking much. It's one of the most enjoyable and also connective, and like it feels like the stakes couldn't possibly be higher.
Yeah.
At least within like the environment of Summer House and what we're watching right now, like they're having a wild, outstanding season and it's inspiring a lot of conversation, which I'm really appreciative about. So
yeah,
would love to have you back. In the meantime, where can AGs follow you on Instagram, on TikTok, and what can they look forward to? Like what's your, not necessarily elevator pitch, but spiritual mission as a content creator? What do you like to focus on?
Well, you know, I feel like reality TV and life in general can just be hard and toxic and whatever. So my goal is to always make people feel better, you know, to laugh, to have fun, to enjoy reality TV for what it's worth, which is entertainment. And, you know, we can have differing opinions and still have it be fun. So that's kind of what I'm all about. You can find me on social media at Morgan P Talks. I have a Patreon where I do Bachelor, Bravo, Survivor, pop culture and celebrities. So anything you want in the entertainment world, you can find there. And also my podcast episodes come out every Thursday. And that's Morgan's Pop Talks.
Love. So highly encourage that people follow you and watch all of that. This episode was inspired by me watching one of your reels and being like, need to get her on tip immediately to discuss VPR. So I'm so thankful that you made the time to chat today. And guys, speaking of making the time, have you made the time to listen to the 900 Patreon episodes that have come up on the AG page this week, including an extra super, 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 super sized Satchel Spectacular about all things Lala, Ariana, Girl Code, Katie, Sheena, what the fuck is going on with their reactions to Ariana and also Tom. So listen to that on the AG Patreon at patreon.com/AndysGirls. You can follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. And thanks again, Morgan P, for joining.
Thank you, Sarah.
All right, guys. Thanks to all of you for listening, and we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.